This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
All my people out there, all my viewers, all my listeners, all my followers, this is a platform I have called The Break Room. I call it The Break Room, and I spell it B-R-A-K-E, not B-R-E-A-K. Or B-R-A-K-E, because I feel like sometimes in life we're moving too fast and we need to stop, pump the brakes, reassess where we're going and where we came from. And where we came from is a great phrase to use right now because, how would I say this? I have been looking for this person for eons, for decades. Yes, I'm old. I just turned 40 November, 2 months ago. And in at least two decades, from high school or beyond, I was like, where's Michelle? I wonder how she's doing. Where's Michelle? And kids out there, anybody under 30, you know, the MySpace era, as dope as it was as far as going online, connecting with people, seeing social media, whatever, it wasn't as accessible today to find people. Yeah, if someone made a profile, maybe you can find them. If someone had a mi gente, maybe you can find them. But it's like, you still had to sit down on the computer on your free time. You weren't mobile yet, so it wasn't like at your leisure. Throughout the years, at least from 03, 02 on, I would wonder, where's Michelle Gonzalez? Where is she? Is she okay? Sometimes in life, you have people who just drop off the face of the earth, just drop off the planet. You can't find them. You don't know what happened to them. You're wondering, the cynical party was wondering, are they okay? Are they safe? Are they all right? Whatever. Oh, and me, I watch a lot of ID, this channel, you know, Discovery Network shows. So I would wonder, like, is she okay? Is she safe? Where is this beautiful human spirit that I remember with this big smile, with this curly hair bouncing in seventh, eighth grade? And she had the OG older sister who was rough, and she was adorable, still is, by the way. And where is this young lady who was fascinating to me even then? And I know I'm rambling, but let me just say one more thing. Sometimes in life, you know, life's moving so fast, you don't get the chance to appreciate things as it's happening. But for some things you do, and I remember being in my teens, 13 years old, 12, 13 years old, I remember saying to myself, this girl's special. I remember telling myself that, like, this girl's special. She makes me laugh. She is boisterous. She has a great smile. She's always positive. And I remember saying to myself, I should remember this person the rest of my life. I should hold on to this person. So you made an impression on me earlier on. And the person I'm talking about is my guest today. Her name is Michelle. So welcome, Michelle, to The Break Room.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I'm glad you're here. The title of this episode is called Where's Waldo? Because like I said, I've been looking for you. I have been looking for you for ages because I feel like, one, I miss your energy. And two, as a man, I was also concerned. I was like, is she okay?
Yeah.
You know, you hear horror stories sometimes about women who just go missing.
Whatever. I know.
You know, Get Out is a movie, but sometimes Get Out happens where people are just like gone on the face of the earth. I don't know if you've seen that movie. But listen, in short, how the hell are you?
Good. I'm good. Been through hell and back, but I'm here. Still living, still pushing.
Been through hell and back. And I, as you say that, obviously I have more context to that because I know much of your story, and we're not going to share everything because y'all don't deserve everything. But what I will say is, been through hell and back. I would imagine so, because I remember, like I said, I brought up MySpace. I remember, it had to be 06, 05, 06 ish. I remember perusing, scrolling through MySpace. Somebody, whether it's Alex Gonzalez, shout out to you, Alex, if you're seeing this, somebody had linked me to your profile. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
ooh. So I stopped creating my MySpace colors and codes and stuff. And I stopped my song that I play, and I stopped my top eight people. I disregarded that. I just went to your page. And I remember seeing you. We're like in our late teens, early 20s by this time. I remember seeing, don't mind the background noise. My wife's making sofrito.
I just got a big cup of sofrito.
I remember seeing you then. And the first word I thought when I saw you, remember, we're in our late 20s, teens, early 20s, yeah. early 20s, by 06. The first word I had was, she looks mature. She looks mature.
Yeah.
And she looks grown. And full disclosure, some men in general, they don't grow to their 30s. Sometimes our brain are still developing. You know, we develop late. But I remember seeing you there, and I was like, oh, she's still beautiful, but she looks grown there.
Yeah.
She looks grown, and she looks busy. She looks grown, and she looks busy. And she looks like, and by that time, I think you were already a mother.
Yep. I had my first baby boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your first baby. All right. Mm-hmm. Who, how old is he now? 20?
He's 20. He'll be 21 this year.
He'll be 21 this year. Mm-hmm. So, right. Okay, that makes sense. So I remember seeing you like, wow, she looks grown. And I'm like, I said to myself, I wonder where she's going. So can you take me back? Well, you know what? Before you take me back to that point in time, can you take me back to transitioning from the Bronx to Rockland? What was that like for you?
So transitioning from the Bronx to Rockland, it was a little, I was young. So we moved out there, what, 99, I think it was, 98. So mm-hmm. We were still fairly young. It wasn't that hard to leave school, you know, my schools back then and my friends, because the friends I have are friends that I grew up with on my grandma's block. My grandmother lived in the same block for 30-something, 40 years.
Where were you at? Because I used to live on Freeman Street. I used to live in Pelham Parkway. Where were you at?
She lived on 170th Street and Townsend Avenue over by Mount Eden. And
man, you was there. I know where you were at. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You made it out.
That's home right there. So, because that's where we stayed at. We were always there. And so going to Rockland, every weekend we were in the city. So it was like we didn't miss a step.
Good, good. Okay. Good. You still had that cultural connection to your actual humble beginnings while also being in a new land and meeting new people. Were you able to embrace Rockland as a youth, or was it weird for you?
So at first it was weird because we were like, what the hell? Are we in the country? Come back.
And if I remember correctly, were you by the 200 building? Where were you living by? Where were y'all living?
I forget the name of the cross streets, but it was right on the corner. It was the name of the street was Flavor.
It wasn't Eckerson. I thought you lived in a house by
near Eckerson. So, it was near Eckerson. Yeah, right. But it was like right. I don't even know the street name anymore. But yeah, when we moved there, we were so like at first we were upset and we were like, you know, what is this? We were happy that we got a house. My dad finally took us out the city, you know, and out of the small apartments and bought us a house. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. And then moving there, you know, remember Courtney Chandler? She lived on the same block. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, she was our neighbor. So we became friends because she was from the city too. So we connected together, and you know we were friends before we even started school. So no that kidding. Was nice to have, you know, start school with somebody that you know.
You know, shout out to Courtney because she just had a baby.
Oh yeah, so cute.
With James Jones, another classmate. So shout out to them both. That's interesting. But okay, so you moved. You're here now, and mm-hmm. like 98, 99, you're adjusting. Did you make friends inside the schools? Like I know you had the blog friends, like Courtney.
In school, so when I first started at Pomona, my first impression of anybody was Jessica Minogue. I loved that girl. And so we were in history class.
Shout out to Jess.
I'm sitting there. I'm just sitting there, whatever, in my desk. And she comes to me. She goes, hey, my name is Jessica. Like, you know, she introduced herself, and so she made me comfortable, and we connected, and I really appreciated that. And then I remember my first day in Pomona and at the cafeteria, I was sitting by myself, and then I remember a group of like people were coming up to me one by one. So I remember Antoine, I remember Lisa, I remember you. I was like, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool how welcoming everybody was. It's not like, you know, people are like the new girl, you know, don't talk to the new girl. It was pretty cool. How was
I had that experience because I would imagine some people go to a new school and they're standoffish or they feel certain bad vibes and whatnot. And I remember, as you said, Jessica's name, shout out to Jessica. I remember you guys were like freaking frat, like always around each other, close proximity. And I remember y'all always had good vibes together. So I appreciate that she had that gesture to you of like welcoming. That's dope.
Oh yeah, that's my girl. I still like, that's my girl. Like we were just talking the other day and I told her, I was like, when I come to New York, I better see you. So
well, you know, that also shows, you know, if you think about it, how when you can't teach class, you can't teach warmth. Some people just have it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that she had it. I think you had it because like I said, there is a perception of pretty privilege. So, you know, some people can get snotty because they're pretty and whatnot. And remember, you are a beautiful young lady coming to a new school from the Bronx. So you already have an edge to yourself. And you are, like I said, extremely beautiful. You have a nice, adorable smile. You got an older sister. And you have like this fun personality, this curly hair that's bouncing. You could have been like, eh, fuck yeah. I'm forced to be here.
No, that's not me.
I didn't want to move up north. But you had a positive vibe to yourself. Yeah. Like I said, I remember thinking to myself then, like, oh snap, this person's positive off rip. I should acknowledge that. I should remember this because not everybody's positive. So and you know, some kids are cruel.
My kids, I'd be like, they were like, mom, you need to go to the gym. I'm like, bro.
Oh, man. You know, as a mother, as a father, yo, kids can be brutally honest. It's like, really? That's how you feel? So, you know, I always appreciate that about you and your little ecosystem. And throughout the years, I always, you know, appreciate you. But then maybe, I don't know what it was. I don't know maybe if it was in late high school. I don't know what happened, but I guess I started to drift away and to find my own little mini social circles where like I just lost grip of certain people from junior high.
I feel the same way too. I think once we all started hitting high school, we all started, you know, finding our own little social groups and stuff like that. But I feel like where I started like separating a little bit was because I remember the Quest program. Remember, they used to send people off to another school for a few hours in the daytime.
No, that sounds a little familiar, but put me onto that. What was that program?
So when I was in ninth grade, they almost held me back because my grades were like really bad. So
why were they bad? You was outside?
I was making too many friends.
You was really getting adjusted.
So when I got my report, my end of the year report, they were like possibly held back, but here are your options. And they gave me options and they brought out the Quest program. And so with the Quest program, they were like, well, you'll take the bus and it'll take you to another building for a few hours. It was almost like half night school kind of thing set up.
Right.
In the daytime. So I did all my core classes there. And I had to do part of ninth grade in those core classes for the first few months of 10th grade. And I was able to catch up. And so because I did that, I really appreciate that program. I caught up by January. And so I was able to be back in my normal grade. And so.
So you weren't necessarily in the freshman center. Remember,
I was in the freshman center, but when we went to the main building, the main campus, I had to go in the morning. I had to go to another building and then I would come in the afternoon and be at the main campus.
And they would bus you? They had.
Yeah. But sometimes we would ride with, remember Freddie Rodriguez?
Yeah.
When he got his car, we would ride with him.
For you out. Yeah. By the way, sidebar, I'm glad you mentioned that. Shout out to anybody in high school who had a whip, who had a car. You were golden. Right? I ain't on the bus. Darnell got a car.
Right,
You know, I'm thinking of someone else who you probably remember that I grew up with, lived in Gessner for a while. Eddie. I don't know if you remember Edison Young. Do you remember Edison?
I do remember Eddie, yeah.
Okay, so Edison, he had to do a similar program.
Yeah, he was in it with me. It was me.
He was with you.
Diana, Jessica, we were all in there. Like, yeah.
Okay, so I remember him telling me, I got to do this program, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That's,
we had so, y'all so much fun. Yeah, we had so much fun being there because it was smaller classes and we were all together in our classes. And so it was so nice. It was so fun. Okay. I really appreciated it.
And y'all probably had a little bonding moment, like, we all wilded out. So
we were all together.
We got to lock in because we all wilded out. I remember back then, I grew up with Edison because he grew up on my block. He was in Gessner, his building, and I was in this building called Union Gardens, but it was on the same street.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were neighbors pretty much. And so all throughout my adolescence, I was with him. And then, like I told you, there was a blip where I didn't see certain people no more.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's
big group. There were a lot of us in there, and everybody that I went in there, I became really close friends with. So I became really close with Freddie, Diana. Like, we were all, like, always hanging out. Like, we hung out a lot together. And
good.
Yeah, it was a good program. And the teachers were pretty cool, too. Cool. They were really laid back, and it was a good Quest
program. So that's what it was called. I don't know why I thought it was called Job Corps, but it was Quest.
It was Quest, okay. Yeah.
Quest program. Okay, so you do Quest program. Does Quest program get you back on track for the remainder of your high school tenure?
It did get me back on track for the rest of my high school tenure. And then by the end of it, by senior year, so you know how you have to take the exams, the Regents exams and all that stuff. I had my science one. I failed it by 2 points.
That's why
I didn't go to graduation, because they were like, oh, you have to go to summer school to retake the test. That's it. Just to retake the test. I was like, so I can't walk across the stage. They were like, no. That was the most devastating day of my life.
Really?
I've had more devastating days, but that's another story.
Right. For that time.
I was so devastated. And I was devastated because I was one of the first ones in my family to graduate high school. So
Really? Even
like with my sister, Jasmine, she didn't finish high school. So it was, you know, I was the one with the torch.
Was there pressure from your family?
No, there was no pressure. There was no pressure. But I put the pressure on myself. You know, I was like, you know, I got to get this done. You know, I'm the first one. Everybody's going to be so happy. I'm going to have my family there. Blah, blah. Man, they told me I'm not walking across that city. I was crying and crying. And I remember I was so sad because my mom was also relocating to Florida that same summer. And so there was a lot going on, and I was so sad. And then
finally, a true boardie.
Yeah. I finally took the test, and then they're like, oh, you passed it with 90%. I was like, oh, thank you. And they were handing me my diploma, and they were like, congratulations. Oh. I was like, this means nothing.
It was unceremonial. It was.
Yeah, it wasn't. It didn't mean anything.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because in my junior year, in 11th grade, I flunked. First of all, I'm glad you mentioned this whole Regents thing. Listen, they try to sell it to you that, like, you need your Regents degree. It's New York State. If you don't have it, blah, 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 you won't get into this, that, and the third. It's all bullshit.
It is.
It's all. It doesn't mean nothing. And I flunked my sequential math in the grade Regents. And I remember them telling me, they told me the same thing in junior year. They're like, yo, you need to go come back in August and take the test. Oh. You can come to classes in July if you want to prep, or just come in August and take the test. Sure enough, just bypassed summer school and just came in August. And I don't remember if I passed it. I don't remember.
It was ridiculous. I think that was unfair how they rob people from an experience like that, because, you know, not only was you're robbing me and my family from the experience, but the experience that I was having with everybody that I went to school with, starting from eighth grade and up, like, everybody that was graduating, and I wanted to be there too. But
Right.
But,
yeah, my oldest, she went through that in last year, well, 2 years ago, she went through that. She had to graduate in August. Similar experience. Well, she made it. She graduated, and they had to do it summer school or the graduation at Lehman High School. Well, not Lehman High School. I forgot what school that was. But it was in the Bronx. But yeah, I can imagine was it embarrassment, or was it just like, oh, shucks, like.
It was just more disappointment than embarrassment. Like, I wasn't embarrassed because I was more angry. I'm like, for 2 points, I can't. Are you serious? Oh. You're telling me I can't walk across the stage with everybody over 2 points.
Curve.
Yeah.
Yeah, this should be
exactly
for that. And like, I let her go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's whack. And I'm Rand Paul, you suck at that. mind you, you haven't been back in like, you haven't been back to Rockland, I'm sure, in decades, right?
Since high school, since we graduated. Since high school.
Like, first of all, Spring Valley, Rockland in general, but especially Spring Valley and Rampo, it's changed. It's it's a lot more, and I'm live on camera, so I have to be careful with my words. I can't use that word.
I can imagine. But you know, I've been looking it
you
up.
You know, folks took over.
Yeah, folks took over. I've seen it.
Yeah, folks took over. I mean, listen, we don't discriminate, but folks took over.
Right.
And it's had an impression on the dynamic of that town, that village, and the people in it. So, you know, things have changed. There used to be a lot more flavor back then. My parents still live there, so I go up every once in a while to go see them. But yeah, it's definitely changed. It's definitely changed. Some would say for the worst, but I'm not here to judge right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get canceled. Because some people or groups of people are powerful.
Yeah.
But so on one hand, you're graduating in August.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, your mom telling you, "Hey, we're moving to Florida."
Well, she was like, "You graduate." She was waiting for me to graduate. So she was like, "You're graduated. I'm going to take your other three siblings." Jasmine was already living her life. You know, she was already,
outside
her own thing. Yeah. So I moved in with my grandmother.
In the Bronx? Where was she at?
We were driving from, I think it was 2002. We ended up selling the house. And Yeah, we sold the house because my dad, he ended up in prison. So my mom had to do what he had to do. So we sold the house. And when we sold the house, my mom moved in with her mother-in-law, my dad's mom. And she was staying there. So I stayed there with her. And I would come back and forth to Rockland on the weekends. And then and sometimes I would stay during the week. There's other stories about that, but we're not going to tell that other story.
Of course.
But my grandfather, he would transport us from Washington Heights all the way to Rockland every morning.
Wow, so your grandmother was living up, it was in the Heights.
In the Heights, yeah. Yeah, we were coming from the Heights. On the weekends, I would go stay with my mom's mom, my grandmother. I'm from in the Bronx. Wow. So they were waiting for me to graduate because my grandfather was like, "I'm not going to keep doing this. I'm only doing this for Michelle." And because when she sold the house, we were going to relocate to Florida, Kissimmee, Florida. And we actually ended up going. We had a house out there and everything. And we were so miserable. I was so miserable. And I was so sad because I left everybody behind. I have my boyfriend at the time. We're not going to talk about him. Mm-hmm. So I was, devastated that I had to leave him behind. I was devastated that I left my friends and all that stuff. So my mom was like, "You know what? We're going back. We're going back to New York." And so we were in Kissimmee probably maybe a week or two. And she was like, I can't see my girls miserable like this. And, my boy like that. So we went back. And then when we went back, we had to move in with family. And staying with family was a little rough. But you know what? I stayed with other people too.
First of all, my wife's from Dykeman. She's from right above the Heights. She's from Dykeman. So she, she's from that area. Man, you've been a nomad growing up. You've been moving around a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Place to place. Mm-hmm. Town to town. How does that much movement affect or influence you?
And so it affected me because, going from school to school is, having to make new friends. I'm shy. So if I'm starting a new place, my face turns red. I get flustered. I get nervous. So having to experience that over and over again, it's like, I got to do this again. And, I got comfortable in an area with my high school friends. And, I got comfortable there. I got comfortable in my life because I didn't have to do that over and over again. And so that's why my grandfather committed to keeping me going to Rampo, because he was like, "We're not doing this anymore." And he was like, you're going to finish high school and I'll take you every day. And sure enough, 6 a.m. every day. I'm downstairs.
Yo, shout out to your grandparents for committing that to you, committing to your stability.
Yeah. Oh,
that's such dedication, especially for like viejos to be doing this.
Yeah.
That is, I salute to them. I know he told me he passed away during COVID.
Missed him a lot.
My condolences. But shout out to him. He's a G for that. Mm-hmm. And also, shout out to your mom for having the compassion to be in Florida. Like, I can't see them being sad and taking y'all back. You know, I salute your mom for that, too. I don't want to get too deep because it's your business, but I will ask you, how did your dad's situation or imprisonment affect you as a daughter?
So as a daughter, I was so angry at him because when he got locked up, I was 13. So we had just moved to Rockland, and not even months later, a year later, he was already in prison. And so I felt like my most crucial years, my daddy was gone. So 13 to 18, he was gone. And so I felt like because of that, I was I became a little rebellious, or not bad rebellious, but it was like, I'm sneak out the house kind of thing. And mom, you're not going to talk to me that way. But even though I was still sweet to my mom, but I was still stand up like, shut up, mom. But I love my mom. But it was very hard on me. Because it was also hard on me because I found out that he's not my biological at the same time. Same year, I found out he wasn't my biological dad. And I was like,
go ahead.
I was like, you guys are lying. But you know, it's crazy because there were family members that were hinted to me, and I'm the lightest one out of my siblings. So I'm just like, I would be like, mom, how come I'm the whitest one out of all my siblings? Why is my hair this color? And blah, blah, blah. Why, how come my hair doesn't look like my siblings? And so she wouldn't tell me about it. But then eventually I heard it from like other family members. And then I heard it from my mom's childhood best friend. So I was like,
You heard it from your mom's childhood best friend.
Yeah.
How did a 13-year-old get that information or acquire it? Was it like, were you ear hustling or?
I wasn't. We were. So my sister Jasmine and I were on my grandmother's block. And so we went to the store, and the guy's name's Teddy. So Teddy sees us. And he goes, oh, hey, girls. He, you know, gives us hugs because he's family. He's like family. So hugs. And we're just sitting there, you know, we're walking and talking. I think he was mad at my mom.
Oh, he was being petty.
Yeah, he was being petty. So he goes, you know, girls. He was like, Michelle, has anyone told you about your father?
And he did that.
Yeah, he was like, what? I was like, my dad? I know my dad. And he was like, no, Modesto's not your dad. I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
It's a grown man, mind you.
Grown man talking to a 13-year-old, and Jasmine was 15 at the time.
Oh my God.
So he was like, you were like one or two when your dad and Mo got together. I was like, I knew it. I cried a little bit, and I was like, I knew it because my Titi Annette, she was drunk one day. And she's just hanging out. She's like, oh, I remember when Madeline met Mo. You girls were little. I was like, Titi, what are you talking about? We were little.
We were zygotes.
Yeah. She retracted it back. But, you know, there were, like I said, family members were trying to tell me, but without, you know, getting themselves in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so they would just say, oh, you know, Mo's not your dad and stuff like that. Or, you know, you have a different dad. You know, I heard you had a different dad. And I'm like, I ignored all those things until Teddy says something. And I never brought it up to my mom until seven years ago that I knew.
What was that like?
Well, my daughter, one day we're hanging out. We're at Jasmine's apartment in New York. We were visiting. And my daughter goes, Mama, how come you didn't tell Mommy about her dad? I was like,
oh, shit.
I was so embarrassed. And I was like, Angelica, and so she goes, no. She was like, Mama, tell Mommy about her dad. How come you won't tell her? And so then I had to, you know, face
it. Kids are being kids again.
Oh, yeah. So I had to face it to her because I was afraid to ask her because I didn't want her to have to be embarrassed or lie about it. So then she told me, she was like, you know, she told me the story, and she told me that he didn't want to have anything to do with me. So the last time he saw me, she said I was maybe 3 or 4. And
biological.
Yeah, my biological dad. And so he basically disowned me. He had a second family, it turned out. So, yeah. That's so lovely. It's a lot. But, you know, I do wish that I could find him. The only reason why I want to find him is because I want to face him and be like, you know, you missed out kind of thing. But I have my daddy. I love my dad. That's my morenito dominicano.
Yeah, right.
So I love my dad, and, you know, he's the one that raised me. He's my entire life has been.
He's your father.
Yep.
He's your father.
Yep. So, yeah.
Wow. Again, kids being kids with a mouth.
Oh, yeah.
But Debs, this your mom's friend from the block. Who,
oh, that was so messed up. That was so messed up.
And you know what? It also proves that dudes be gossiping.
Yeah.
Dudes be gossiping and dudes.
Yeah, he was
and
so dudes petty.
And, you know, we like to say, like, oh, women are emotional. Women are chatty patties. Women be gossiping.
Mm-hmm.
Dudes be just as petty and emotional and gossiping, too, because... How dare you, bro? You're a grown man airing out business to these teenage girls, these young pubescent girls. Like, whatever he felt your mom did to him, he was wild that day.
Oh, like, yeah. He was
wow,
something else. He was so petty. But, you know, dude. When I look back at it, I'm like, okay, now I know. And, you know, like, damn, like, I look at my children and I'm like, I wonder if you look like my dad, you know, kind of thing. Or I wonder if you take after him. And I asked my mom, like, do any of my boys look like my biological? And she goes, Michelle, no, they all look like you and they look like their dad. So, and they look like me. I'm like, mom, like, there's still another half of me. It's still there, the emptiness kind of thing. I feel like there's like this whole side of me that I feel like I want to know. So I did a DNA test, but I've gotten hits for cousins, but that's it. And I've reached out, but nothing that was.
Do you know his ethnic makeup, his background?
He's Dominican.
Am I like Dominicanos?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know. The only description she'll give me is like that he was tall and that he was good looking, stuff like that.
I think, and obviously my two cents mean nothing. I think just off of genetics, you know, genetics and hereditary stuff, you should want to seek out information, like, just to know what to look for in your children or your own genetics down the line. You should try to maybe make an attempt down the line to figure out who this person is or what he has in his bio makeup. And on top of that, you may discover gems in a new family.
Yeah.
You know, you may have siblings out there or cousins that you can discover and make bonds with. It may become a fruitful thing. So I would never want to try to sway you from not exploring that. You know what I'm saying? And you hear these stories, you know, people on TV, whether it's on Oprah or whatever, of people making new connections in their 40s.
Yeah.
So I if you ever have qualms about it, like reservations about it, you know, don't listen to those reservations. You have the full rights if you want to push and find out for sure this other side of it.
Well, when I did the ancestry DNA thing, I was able to, you know, it was, I feel like I was hitting a dead end with my biological dad side, but I was able to go through like my mom's side of the family. And I went back 6 generations on my mom's side, on my grandfather's lineage. I went 5 generations back and I was in it and I was like, oh my God, calling my mom, mom, you know, that our great grandparents, this and that. It was really fun to do.
Yeah. I'm on ancestry.com too. And I've definitely met like distant cousins, like, oh, okay. Okay. And then I'm like, okay, now I have a plug in Boston. Yeah. I have a plug in Georgia. You know what I mean? Cause I think there's value in making connections with people, you know?
I'm with it.
And I do hope that you get some closure with that, however it comes.
Eventually, I'm just going to, like, probably just be like, you know, it is what it is. He's been gone out of my life this long.
Well, back to you being 13 years old, your dad, your father, your true blue father, he goes away. You have a little bit of moments of acting out and not super rebellious, but you just acting out.
Yeah.
In the time since, have you had any conversation with your dad about that moment in time for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not in person. I did write him a letter when I was 15 or 16. Actually, it was 14, telling him how mad I was at him for leaving.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My mom was so mad that I sent him that letter because I did it behind her back.
She wanted to protect him in a way.
Yeah. She wanted to protect him in a way to where he's not feeling like, you know, he failed us. But I went in. I was like, you know, and it's crazy because I don't know if I said you're not even my father in the letter, but I feel like I did, but I don't remember. But
you were hurt.
Oh my God. I was so hurt because my dad and I, we used to, I remember, you know, my earliest memories with him is going out, we'll go to the library, we'll hang out, you know, it was just, I missed my dad. So, so I was really hurt. And then, eventually I got over it. And then eventually, you know, we would see him more often and, you know, he would apologize. To this day, he regrets like a lot of things. And he always calls us girls and he'd be like, I'm sorry, Buzz. I'm sorry you had to go through the things that you went through. I'm sorry that I missed out on those years and I went away for that time. Like he lives with a lot of regret from that.
I could imagine. And, you know, I'm glad you use the word regret because sometimes you'll get people who are, some of them I believe, but also you have people who are proud where they say, I don't have regrets.
Right.
But regrets are natural.
Yeah.
And I have regrets that I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I should have said it that way. Or, You learn to live with them and hopefully teach your people under you, like children or otherwise. This is how you don't move like me. I did it this way, you do it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure your father has regrets. I do wonder, because remember what I said? I opened this episode talking about how my impression of you in that time, 13 years old, 14 years old, was someone who was uber positive. You were very positive. You were very... I don't remember you being angry. I don't remember you being confrontational.
Yeah, it takes a lot for me to get angry. I've learned about myself that I'm a very patient person, but there are some things I didn't tolerate. You know, even as a teenager, there were a lot of things I didn't tolerate. But as I've grown older, I have become like even way more patient. Like people are like, I'm sorry, you know. I'm like, no much. Like, you know, we're still here, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, you've been through war, so you're like, whatever. This is nothing.
And it takes so much for me to get like, you know, so angry to the point, like, I'm going to punch you in the damn face kind of thing. Like, we're about to fight.
Well, that's an emotional maturity you have, clearly. But I wonder, how does a young lady at 13, 14 years old, finding out your true identity, your biological identity, coupled with the idea of my dad's going away or he's locked up, how were you able to, it's a two-part question, if you indulge me. How were you, able to put on a face or presentation that you're still positive? And B, more importantly, how are you able to cope with this all, cope with all of it in that age frame?
So the way I feel like back then, the way I coped with it is I started dating. So because I wasn't a person that was going out with people, like, and I started dating. And so I think I filled that void with dating. And I also, because my dad being around, I was, no, boyfriend, what? Hell no. Once dad was out the picture for those years, I had boyfriends. And so I think that's where my coping ended up going into. And then I just submerged myself within my friends and stuff like that. So, you know, I pushed it off. And then I got to see my dad. So he called every day, you know, and he started, when he was in prison, they transferred him into like a camp kind of thing. So we got to see him, hang out with him, hug him, and eat with him, stuff like that. So it was like he was gone, but not, because we would go see him almost probably once a week, maybe, or something like that. So, but it was still like, I was mad, but I wasn't angry to the point where I was hateful or anything like that.
Have you ever had the conversation with him about the identity, or are you learning about things? Does he know you know, or he don't know?
I think he does. I think he does. I've never asked him, and I don't know if my mom shared it with him. But yeah, I don't. I assume he knows that I know. So, but I don't think I'm ready for that conversation.
Listen, listen. There's one thing that's constant. I don't care what island you're from or what island your parents are from. There's one thing that remains constant. You know, Caribbean folks, West Indian folks, Black and Brown folks, we don't like to air things out. You know, we'll let shit linger to the end of time. Yeah. You know, some stuff don't get revealed till a funeral, like, just so you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get it. But I do think there may come a time where you and your father will have that conversation and it'll end beautifully, that conversation.
Yeah, hopefully. I do have a letter that I wrote him probably about 10 years ago that I still have that I never, you know, my intention was to mail it to him, but I held it back because I wasn't ready for it. So one day I'll probably give it to him, but I might revise it a little bit, of course.
Well, let me warn you. Let me warn you. We're getting old. We're in our 40s now. Mm-hmm. They're not, I mean, knock on wood from my parents. Folks are going before you know.
I know. I told my mom the other day, I was like, Mom, you're 60 years old. I said, you realize that you might only have 15 years left? Because I was trying to put it in a perspective. Yeah, I put it in a perspective of how early, you know, my grandparents both passed away in their 70s. So right. It's like, you know, that's, you know, you got to start thinking about that because, you know, for health wise.
Right.
I was, you know, pointing that out to my mom. And I was like, then I started thinking to myself, like, damn, that means I don't even, if that's the case for myself, you know, I might have 35 years left in me.
Right. So, God willing. But I understand, you know, your father, you know, he broke your heart when he went away like that.
Yeah.
But I do also salute him for taking on the responsibility of you with love, it seems like.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, not making you feel different. Did he, you know?
He never made me feel different. I was his little chela, his princess. I'm still his princess to this day. Like, he calls all his girls princess. You know, so for him to still call me that at my age, I'm like, I know my daddy loves me.
So, right. Shout out to him. Shout out to both your parents.
Yeah, my mom's awesome.
shout out to both of you and your grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
But One last thing about your adolescence, about your teenage years. You said you were dating in your father's absence. Can I ask this question? It's a macro question. It's not micro.
Okay.
It's on a big scale. Given who you were back then, what I mean by that is, like I said, you were young, beautiful, vibrant, young lady. Were guys good to you or were they weird to you? What were boys like to you at that time?
There's some that were weird to me, but there are some that were good to me. The ones that were good to me, I really appreciate them because they were a big part of my life. And I will never forget them. I'm not going to say names, but I do appreciate them. And they had a big impact in my life because even after I stopped dating those guys, I still carried them with me in my early 20s. And it got to the point where even my ex-husband would get like jealous of them, but I'm like, I'm not even talking to these guys anymore.
That was
my past before you. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, dudes could be territorial and jealous. I'm guilty too. But I asked because, you know, just talking to you now and thinking about that time, you know, I remember being in Pomona and later on Rampo where dating back then, it felt so innocent at times. You know, I teach middle school as well, but I teach special ed. I teach autism. So there's not really a social situation like what we had.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to tell all my colleagues, because, you know, now that we're 40, I'm the OG.
Right.
I got colleagues who are 20 years old, 25, who don't know nothing about writing letters. They don't know nothing about writing letters, you know, love letters. They don't know nothing about
love letters in the lockers.
Yeah. They know nothing about that experience. Texting, and mind you, sidebar. I have a. I don't know if your son does this or your daughter does this. I have a huge gripe with the young kids today calling their like significant others bro.
Oh my gosh!
Like bro,
my oldest does that. I'm like, why are you calling her bro? Like she ain't your bro. You look mom.
Yeah,
bro. Well, that's my bro.
Like bro. I'm like, yo, that's not your bro. That's your lady. That's your
exactly. Yeah, it's so weird the way these young kids love now, because I'm like, you guys are not sappy like the way we used to be.
Yeah, they're not sappy. They're not. They don't know how to emote. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's weird, but I have my daughter here next to me. Mind you, she's naked, so I don't know why you're naked. Kia, this girl's naked. But anyway, yeah, she's like mad naked friend. But yeah, these kids today, they don't know how to emote. They don't know how to
make things special. Like, I remember Valentine's Day was the biggest thing, right? In high school. And every, you know, the balloons, the little bears, all that stuff. And I'm like, now, I'm like, where's all that at? Like, what happened to the love? Like, I feel like there's no love in in relationships.
Romance.
Yeah.
Like, I have a memory of a junior year, 11th grade at Rampo. My boy, Christian, his name is Christian Bell Scott. He was in love and still is, and not just still is married now to Fabulita, who used to live by me.
Really?
Yeah. So, and he loved her then. He loved her from, I met him in ninth grade at the Freshman Center.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Fabi were only knew each other from Pomona.
Mm-hmm.
So when we all connected, he met her then, and he told me then, like in ninth grade, I like this girl. I want to be with her. And I was like, whatever, nigga, we outside. Like, who cares? Let's go play ball. And, you know, he stuck through it. Like,
yeah.
They would date. They would take breaks. They would date. And he would always stay by her side. Yeah. And I remember in junior year, this is the burning CDs, make your own mixtape.
Oh, yeah.
So he was like, yo, look what I got. He's like, I got flowers. I got candy. And I got her a little CD, Boys to Men, on 12, all these songs and a playlist for her. And I was like, look at him like, oh, you really love this girl. Like, you really care about this shit. Like, okay. Appreciated that he had the wherewithal,
mm-hmm.
and the courage to emote that. Like, I like you. I want to be with you.
Yeah.
And whatnot. And it lasted for, what, junior years, 2002?
Probably about 22, 23 years, maybe a little bit longer. Yeah.
We're talking like a quarter century. Yeah, he's been to the point where he married her today. They're married today.
That's so special. I love all the people, the ones that we went to high school and they're still together. I love seeing that so much. I'm like that is so special.
Yeah. And you know, with Christian, you know, remember, I stayed here in New York and I stayed here. I was in Rockland for a while in my early 20s. So, you know, I used to hang out with him like in my early 20s when like now we can be outside with our own cars and stuff and mm-hmm. running around and date. And he would have girls pressing him like want to date him. And he'd be like, nah, I'm waiting on Fab. And Fab is a grown woman living her own life and her own journey. And he would just wait it out. He'd be like, no, I'm waiting for her.
Wow.
And he thugged it out. And I'm like, Christian, this other girl, she wants you. Like, she's feeding for you. She bought you a turtle. I went to his house one day. I see a turtle swimming in the tank. Like, what's that turtle? Well, some girl gave it to me. She likes me. I'm like, dude. But he knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I try to tell women, listen, when a man has conviction about you, believe it.
Yeah.
He wants you, he'll show you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always, like, after my, like, being married, you know, and stuff, I would sometimes reflect, like, I wonder, you know, kind of thing. Like, I wonder what would have happened had I stayed in New York. What would have been like if I, you know, things like that. But then I'm like, you know, those wonders, you know, those were just little parts of my life that, you know, helped mold who I am. And mm-hmm. I do appreciate those parts of my life. But, you know, I moved on from it. You know, I'm no longer there. So.
Well, you mentioned New York. Mm-hmm. I've been texted recently. You gave me a little recap of how you, at the high school, how you transitioned where your mom was in Florida for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And while down there, I guess you were either visiting family.
Yeah, or I was visiting mom.
Your mom. And then you happened to bump into your former husband.
Mm-hmm.
What, I don't really necessarily want to pry as far as how you met him per se. What I'm more interested in, What I'm more interested in is how did meeting your former husband lead to you feeling confident? I don't know if it was confidence, but led you to going with him to Michigan because that's where you are now.
Oh my
what,
God.
What happened? How did you go from family to meeting somebody to I'm leaving the East Coast? What happened there?
So, my intention to going to Florida, I was not planning on living there or anything like that. So I had intentions on coming back home. And when my mom, her living situation, she was renting out a part of a house. And the family that she was staying with were friends of another family member of ours. Anyway, so I don't know. After I met him, he showed up there or whatever. When I met him, he would say, I would marry you tomorrow kind of thing. And like, it was almost like, kind of like love at first sight for, you know. So he goes,
By the way, I don't blame him because you had that effect on people. I can tell you right now. But go ahead.
So I was like, when he found out I was at my age, I was 18, and he was like, no, you're not. He was 23. And I was like, yeah, I'm 18. And he had me show him my ID and everything. He was all over me after that. He was just like on me. And he was like, I want to be with you. And he was about to relocate to Florida, because eventually I was like, you know, it might not be so bad for me to stay in Florida. But I still was drawn to going back home too. Like, I was like, very adamant about it. I was like, I'm going home. Like, I'm going back to my city. I don't like this Florida life. It's nice and warm, but I do not like Florida. So he kept me there longer because he wanted to be with me. He was like, I'm going to move here. So we were seeing each other while I was out there. And because I went in November. So come April or May, the following year, 2004, he moved all his stuff down from Michigan. Because he was from Michigan. So he ended up moving all his stuff down, and we were staying there. He asked my dad. My dad was freshly out of from prison. He asked my dad for my hand in marriage. Like, I think it was like a month into my dad being at home. And my dad's like, yes. And he was like, oh, my dad thought he gonna marry my daughter. And he was like, he just started, you know, Dominican stuff. They talk real fast. So he was like, dad. Yeah, so he was going in on him, and then my brothers were mad too. They were like, you're not marrying my daughter, my sister. And I was like, what? Like, I was so mad, and I'm like, he's doing things the proper way. You know, he's trying to get your blessing, and you guys are against it. And he tried to break up with me, and he was like, you know, I can't do this. Your family's crazy and all that stuff. And I was like, you know, you're not marrying, if you get married, it's not my family you're marrying, it's me. But it happened so fast, and I was like so in love with him, but everything was like moving too fast.
Right, right.
And I was like, I'll come to you. I said, but you got to pick me up in New York so I can get my stuff. He bought my plane ticket to New York, and I go to my abuela's house, and I was like, abuela, yo me voy. And she was like, what? She's flipped out too. And I was like, I'm leaving. Yeah, I'm going to Michigan. And then I went to go visit Abuelo, and he was like, what do you mean you're leaving me? Don't leave me. Oh my God. You know, I felt so bad. My heart was like so torn. And I should have seen that, like, the feelings I was getting leaving, it was like, okay, I should have taken a step back, but I didn't, because I was 18. I was 19 at the time. And, you know, young and love kind of thing. So.
Right. Damn near a Romeo and Juliet situation.
Yeah. So he picked me up in New York, and then he brought me to Michigan. I've been here since.
Was your father home when this happened, or was he still?
Oh, yeah. He was home. And I was like, I'm going back home. I'm going back to Willis House.
Was there anyone from your New York life or from your Florida life who was like supporting you, like, go ahead, like, or they all were
against it? Everybody was against it. Even his side of the family was like, what do you mean you're getting married? Like, you just met this girl. And so everybody was like, they were like, you're too young. Sides. Yeah, we were getting, well, I was hearing it mostly from my side. I wasn't hearing it so much from his side, but eventually I learned what they were saying.
Right, right. Wow. I wonder what the intensity felt like for you to feel compelled to go forward with it, to move with him, but and to do that.
It was just like, I don't know, it was a lot of overwhelming feelings. Like, my thing with my parents is, I'm 19, you're not going to tell me what to do. My dad, right. I'm like, you just got back home and you're not telling me what to do. You've been gone, kind of thing.
Right, right.
So, and then with my grandparents, you know, my abuelo was a little, you know, he was sad. But he's like, you're grown. I'm not going to stop you, kind of thing. Even one of my childhood friends, I remember I had all my stuff leaving my grandmother's house. We were in the hallway and going to the elevator. He was like, where are you going? And I was like, what do you mean where I'm going? He was like, where are you going? I was like, I'm leaving. He was like, what do you mean you're leaving? I was like, I'm going to Michigan. He was like, Michelle, he was trying to reason with me, and he was trying to stop me. And I was like, no, I'm leaving. Like, leave me alone. And like, I just ignored everybody. Everybody was trying to pull me away from each area, and I just blocked it all out.
Have you ever spoken to that person again, that childhood friend?
I spoke to him the last time I spoke to him was in 2008. And, you know, he was like, I tried to stop you. You know, he was like, why didn't you listen to me? He was like, you abandoned all of us. And he was like, I can't believe, like, you really left like that. Now look where you are. Look what's going on in your life, kind of thing. And I didn't talk to him again after that. Not because I didn't want to, it was because we just disconnected.
Right, right. I hope he's doing well wherever he is today.
Yeah, wherever he is today.
Wow, I could just see it like a movie, just the intensity of you just going forward like that so fast.
Oh, it happened really fast.
So he gets your ticket. He gets your ticket. You fly out to Michigan.
Right, he actually picked me. We drove to Michigan from New York.
You drove?
Yeah. It's an 18-hour drive. It's not too bad.
Okay. What was that like? If you remember, it's 20-plus years ago.
Oh, I remember. Trust me.
What was that like when you finally settled into the home of now you're a woman on your own with a man you're about to marry?
So,
what was that like?
So when I came, my first couple months here in Michigan, I was still drawn to my people in New York. And mm-hmm. at the time when he picked me up, I was ending up another relationship. So that's why when I say I was immersing myself with dating, So the guy that I had ended my relationship with that winter, I needed closure. So my first couple weeks there, he didn't have his own place. I didn't know he didn't have his own place at the time.
That matters.
So he did have houses that he bought in Detroit, but they weren't ready to move into. So we were living with some of his like godparents, and then we moved in with friends. Anyway, so the friend that we were living with, I had opened my email. I was Yahoo. I had my Yahoo email open, right? So mm-hmm. I reached out to the ex-boyfriend and I told him, I was like, hey, you know, I didn't tell you that I was moving to, because he knew I was in Florida, but he didn't know I was moving to Michigan. So I want mm-hmm. to tell you that I'm moving to Michigan. I'm in Michigan and I'm not coming back. And so, I was like, I'm not coming back. I want you to know that I love you. I always will love you. And man, I forgot to close on my email. This lady went through my email, told him about it. We weren't married yet. He tried to leave me then too. And I was like, I had to explain myself. And, you know, I told him, you know, I thought he would be a little bit more understanding of, you know, my closure. No, he was like, you know, that's not right. You lie. It was bad. Like, we almost didn't get married because of it.
I mean, listen, I mean, I do wonder, and we're jumping ahead here, but I do wonder if your former husband recognizes how not just y'all were kids, but you especially were a kid. Is there any context to that? Like, does he understand that?
So he used to say, I became your father kind of thing. I finished raising you kind of thing. So he did have that understanding that I was much younger than him and I still had that young mentality. And okay. So he would say, you know, your dad was gone and I rescued you from your family. No, the hell you didn't.
That's a little egotistical.
He is very, very egotistic. Yes, very.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So,
yeah.
I do wonder initially, but going back to Florida, what attracted you to him? I do wonder that. I am curious about that. Like, what was it about him?
So his whole demeanor, and I came in there when I first saw him. When I first saw him, he was very handsome. He was very handsome back then. He had his days. he was very handsome, very young, fresh out the military. Okay, so he was very buff and stuff like that. So, and then I loved his skin color. So, like, I still find his skin color very attractive. And his eyes, it was just, you know, his looks were really nice. And then the way he, like, immersed himself on me and how much like he embraced me and was like, oh my God, like I love you so much. And it was like, at first I was a little like, what? Like, that's so weird that you're, you know, you just met me kind of thing. But he was like, oh my God, I need to have you. You need to be my wife. So I think that's where the attraction came. Like, he would, even before we dated, he was like, he would get jealous that I was about to go on a date with somebody else or I was on the phone with somebody else. He would be like, no, you're mine kind of thing.
So he was persistent. Yes, he was. I think folks today have a phrase for that. They call it love bombing. I don't know. I'm not too well versed in the language.
You know what? I do agree with that. I don't know if he knew that that's what he was doing or he actually didn't know what he was doing or if he was also later on, I've learned that he was also filling a void too. So he was seeking for companionship at his age and he wanted a wife. He didn't want a girlfriend. He wanted a wife. Mm. So that's what he was looking for.
You know, as you said that, it's very important that you teach your children this, as I do mine, that our journeys define or at least aid in how we learn to love. And if we're not given the proper tools to see love, to recognize love, and to act upon it, we may look for love anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's very important that we give our kids the tools to love properly and to also command respect properly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like you mentioned, he had his own journey that made him look for a wife early.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm not really religious. I'm spiritual, more than religious, but I will say that I do feel bad that other people, even people who have heard us before, I feel bad that they went through trauma, you know, because their trauma bled into our lives and then it messed us up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, there's been times where I was like, why the fuck are you making my life hell? But I'm like, okay, well, you went through hell.
Yeah.
You went through hell and you weren't given certain tools. As I haven't, where no one's perfect here. I'm not perfect either. And it affects how we connect. It affects how we value people in our lives. And affects how we value ourselves. Hindsight's 20/20, you know?
Yeah.
But, so this is the time where I am looking for you. You know, the same time as you're giving your goodbye letter, which I'm sure to your ex-boyfriend, that was tough to read. Like, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Just hearing you say that phrase, I'm not coming back, that must have been
He actually connected with my sister, Elizabeth, at that time, and he was so he was so devastated, and he had a, you know, we used to take pictures and develop them, right? So he had a photo album of our pictures together, and he brought them to my sister, and he was like, since she's letting me go, I'm gonna let her go too. So he was like, this is hard for me kind of thing, but I have to do it too.
Have you ever heard from him again? Have you heard from him?
I have one more time in 2007 or 2008, around there. I did talk to him, but I was like, I don't know why I keep wanting to reach out to you, and it was because I was going through a lot in my relationship at that time. So I would go on social media, like I would pop in and out, like I wouldn't stay on it. So I would pop in and out to I would check up on him, see what he's up to. And one time that I did that, we connected. And so I was talking to him on the phone. As a matter of fact, I did see him in New York in 2008 briefly. And we were just like, we were sitting there with each other and talking. And I was like, I can't do this. I'm sitting here with my two boys and my husband's back in Michigan. And I'm sitting here like, I can't do this. You know, like that was my closure that day.
Mm-hmm. Closure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I do wonder, because, you know, I do wonder, is there value in closure? In other words, is there value in seeing someone for one last time and airing things out? Or
I think it's good for some people. I don't think it's for everybody. I know for me, I do value closure. There are a lot of unspoken things that I would like to go back to bring up from my past when I was a teenager and stuff like that. But I don't think I would take that step. Because I'm like, time has passed kind of thing. And it's like, you know, there's no sense in bringing up old things that, you know, everybody has moved on from. But for some reason, I keep having these like lingering thoughts. And I'm like, why am I like that? And I always think that I'm like that because I'm grown, mentally, I'm like very mature and whatever. But there's still time where I feel like I am still mentally stuck in some areas of my part of me that has been stunted because of how early I got married. Like I wasn't able to finish processing my teenage years.
Right.
So I feel like because of that, there's some things that still linger, but they're going away. So
yeah, I mean, because externally you grew up fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you physically grew up fast. You had to moved on your own to a whole other state in the Midwest. You had kids early. You were a young mom. You were 20 when you had your first.
20 years old, 19, pregnant. I got married at 19. My birthday was March. So we got married December. March, I turned 20, had my baby. So it was back nonstop.
I remember you texted me. You had four kids by 24?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you externally grew up fast.
Yeah, I had to grow up fast.
And I could see how, and going through some people call it playing house. You know, we're playing house. We're together. Yeah. We're playing. So I would say, you were not playing house. You were actually making a house, making a home.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so young and so fast that it happened. I have wondered, because you kind of alluded to it just now, I do wonder, were there some things that you were robbed of as your adolescence or your youth that you didn't get to experience or learn? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I feel like because I did everything so young, I was robbed of not being able to just experience my 20s like a normal 20-year-old. And what is a normal 20-year-old, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, just seeing, like, even with my sisters, like, damn, like, they're enjoying their life in their 20s right now while I'm sitting here. I mean, my sisters were moms, too, but they were still enjoying their life. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here trying to conform to my husband at the time and trying to be my... I was actually... He has another son who's 23. And so mm-hmm. I was mommy to him, too. So mm-hmm. I became mommy at 18. You know, I was... Mm-hmm. taking care of him, you know, we were sharing custody and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it was nonstop. And it felt like there was no time to breathe because everything was moving so fast.
I wonder from your teenage years to your 20s, were you, I don't want to use the word robbed, but I do wonder, like, were there personal interests that you felt like you didn't get to explore or achieve?
My personal interest were like, so I don't know. I feel like the only thing that might have been robbed from me that I feel like I had fought in it too was how I cut off my close friendships. So not being able to develop those friendships into something more. Like, I know I can call Jessica today and be like, you know, like nothing ever happened, stuff like that. But, and same thing with Alexandria and stuff like that. And I probably call Diana too. Anyway, but not being able to stay in those friendships that I feel like would have helped me develop into a better, not better, you know, help me mold me into a different type of person. And I still have, of course, my sisters, but even my sisters, I was cutting off. Like, I cut off so many relationships, and it's like, you know, some relationships help mold you too, you know, especially like your friendships. And I cut everybody off. Even my grandparents, they were like, where have you been? How come you haven't called us? Like, we're worried about you. I will go a year without talking to anybody. And it's because I was conforming to my husband. You know, he used to use I think I told you this, that he would use the Bible, like wives submit unto your husbands, cleave unto your husbands. Mm. So I thought I was doing, because we were in church and stuff like that. So I thought I was doing, you know, the right thing. But it turned out I was miserable. I was so miserable. And I was so sad. So it was a lot.
I'm sorry to hear that, because, you know, it's underreported. Even today in the Me Too era, it's still underreported how controlling men can be towards women, whether through the use of religion, through the use of age, through the use of force. There's various ways that men can be impressionable or damn near controlling, if not controlling, of a woman. And I guess I used a bad phrase when I said passion personal interest. I meant to use the word passion. So in other words, like.
No, I didn't have any. No, I didn't get to that point in my life. So
that to me is kind of the robbery.
Yeah.
Because real quick, let me tell you, as a young man, I grew up with a father and grandfather who were musicians.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a house full of music, you know, instruments. You know, my dad playing all night long. I was sneaking and plugging his keyboard and play. And I then later on caught the bug of music. And I always told myself, somehow, some way, music will be my life forever.
Mm-hmm.
As a cat, you know. And today I have a project I'm working on that I'll tell you about off air. It's hopefully going to be fruitful for me.
Mm-hmm.
But music has always been something in my life where it's like, this is a passion. And I remember in high school, a classmate of ours, his name is Franz, Filipino cat.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a music head, and he was able to, through the support of his parents, be an intern at 19, 20 years old at a high school at Def Jam. And he was able to, like, then turn that into a career. So he was able to have a passion in high school or junior or promoter, really. And then little by little, use that passion to eventually have a career.
Right.
And I always admire that, like, you know, he got to live a passion. He got to live out a career or journey through his passion. So when I used the word robbery earlier with you, I feel like, damn, I don't even know if Michelle was given the opportunity to discover a passion in her 20s.
Nope.
You know what I'm saying?
I sure wasn't. I didn't know. I was a mom and I was a wife. That's it. That was it. I was in college, but I was in college in a way that he pursued me into. Well, I was pre-pharmacy. So, I wanted to be a forensic scientist or whatever. But he was like, he was like, oh, you know, that's not realistic, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, why don't you look into something else? I love biology. I love the sciences. And so he was like, well, why don't we pursue? Because we were both going to do pharmacy. By 2008, I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, this is not what I want. And that was the first time I think I ever thought, like, this is not what I want, I think. And as far as a career goes, and I never explored anything else after that until I was in my 30s.
You know, one day, God willing, there might be young ladies watching this feed. Well, young folks in general, because I want young men to heed these words too. What's it like when you're with somebody who's older than you, who's, for lack of better words, controlling or making choices on your behalf? What's it like, if at all, disagreeing with that person? What is that like?
It was intense. It was like, I almost became a yes woman kind of thing. Like, because saying no, that I don't want to do that, was a fight or an argument or, you know, I'm not supportive and I'm not this. And it's like, it was almost like I couldn't have my own mind and my mind had to be his mind. Mm. And like, even to like this day, he would say, I want your mind. So kind of thing. And wow. Yeah. And so he was like, I don't care about looks or anything. I want your mind and I want your soul kind of thing. But it was like, who am I? You know, how can I make my own choices? How is it that I can't make a choice without you not being supportive of me? I'm always supportive of you, even if I disagree. But it became a lie. It was very overwhelming over the years. And and it was almost like, do I make this phone call to my mom? Well, Alan might not like it because he's mad kind of thing. You know, it might bother him. Or if I talk to my grandfather too long, it might bother him. But that's my grandfather. That's my second daddy. And, you know, it's just little decisions like that I ended up conforming to. That's why I cut people off in my 20s, because he didn't even like me having friends. He didn't like me having my friends from high school. Didn't like that I would talk to them. The last person that I spoke to over the years before I reconnected with everybody was Diana Kreppel. Like, she was the last one, and that was back in 2008. I spoke to her, and I was telling her about what was going on in my life and stuff like that. He did not like that I was talking to her. He was like, you know, he was just like, those are your people from your past. You don't need those friends kind of. And I listened, and I was just like, okay, I'm cutting everybody off kind of thing.
Even female friends.
Even female friends he had an issue with.
I remember you tell, I mean, I don't want to, this is very personal, but I remember you even gave me a tidbit of how, like, even your identity was an issue.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't even say I was Puerto Rican. Like, to this day, I can't even say it in front of him. Yeah, like, if I have a little flag somewhere, it's gone.
And mind you, there is no other culture on this planet more proud to represent.
Exactly. So you already know I got my little earrings, my chains, my keychains, everything. But no, if I even have a shirt that has a Puerto Rican flag on it, I'm wrong. And you're not Puerto Rican. You're Black. And I understand that. But this is my culture. This is what I grew up with. My grandparents are from the island. Like, this is who
both.
I am.
You're both, first of all.
Yeah.
You're both. It don't have to be mutually exclusive. You are both.
Right.
And there's beauty. And there's beauty in both. You know what I'm saying? My daughter's bust her ass behind me, but that's okay. But yeah, you're both. And there's beauty in both. So I'm sorry. She must have really bust her ass. Because I heard a boom. I don't know if you heard that boom. But she's all right. Sorry. But yeah, there's beauty in both. And I feel like that was a clear example. When I read that text, that was a clear example of, like, oh, snap. The control was strong.
It was really strong. It was really strong. And when I point out, oh, you're controlling, he'd be like, no, you're controlling. It was almost like he would deflect it back onto me. And it was like, I'm trying to tell you what I view you as right now. And you're not listening to me. I'm always listening to you. But when it comes to me, it's like, who cares about what you think and feel? That's what it felt like. So.
Yikes. Damn. I feel terrible that he was that controlling of you, because I feel like I said, it robbed you of you figuring out who you are independent of him. and what could have been. Damn, before my daughter bust my ass, I had a good question for you, but I lost it. But it's all good. But wow. Okay. So you are at this time with him going through the grind of being a mom, a wife. You say you weren't happy, obviously. Uh-uh. You say you were not happy. Why would you remain? Why would you stay? What was going on with you?
Being comfortable, I guess. Being afraid of the unknown. Not that I was afraid to go back home, because I would have gone back home, but we had kids. But, you know, by the time I was 24, we had 4 kids. So mm-hmm. I'm like, my children do love, they love their dad, you know. And but I just kept coming back because it's where I was, you know. It almost became like who I am. I am him and he is me, kind of thing. And so it was like, how can I picture my life without this man that I've been with for so many years? Kind of thing.
You just said who I am him. Mm-hmm. You just triggered what I wanted to ask you and say to you. Really is what I wanted to say to you more than the question. So I watched this show for years back in the day called Breaking Bad. I'm sure you've heard of it. Breaking mm-hmm. Bad. It was a very popular show on AMC. And the creator of that show, Vince Gilligan, he has a new show out. It's on Apple TV. Mm-hmm. It's called Pluribus is Latin for of many one or of one. And the reason why that show is called Pluribus, it's a new show. It just came out like a few weeks ago. It's like first season's like 8 episodes. So it's a brand new show. But in Pluribus, the storyline or the concept is a writer, a young writer. She's like in her 40s or 50s, an author. She lives in New Mexico, I think, or somewhere in the Southwest. An event happens around the world where a virus plagues the planet, and it's a extracurricular virus, so it comes from outer space. And what happens in this with the virus is it makes the whole planet more or less. There's only like 14 survivors, but it makes the whole planet become one hive mind.
Okay.
One mind where in other words, before we were all individual people. You're Puerto Rican. I'm so and so. You are short. I'm tall. You like apples, I like oranges. We were all individual people. But then that virus comes and it makes everybody the same.
Okay.
They all share one hive mind.
Okay.
And the point of the show is the main character. Oh, also, a hive mind, they're all pleasant. They're all nice. They don't get angry. They're all helpful all day long. And they all capitulate to the people who survived, who didn't get infected. But it's with a catch. They want to eventually turn those 14 survivors in around the world to the hive mind also. So the whole point of the show is the main character, Carol, she's like, she talks to the people who are hive minded and they all talk as we. We think this, Carol, we think that. No matter who she meets, they all speak as one. We. And the whole point of the show is Carol gets frustrated, the main character, because Carol's like, you cannot convince me to join you guys because free will matters.
Mm-hmm.
I like being angry.
Yeah.
I like to drink. I like arguing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I like being wrong. I like some days not being helpful. You know what I'm saying? And I like being an individual.
Yeah.
I don't want to join your clan where I'll be thinking just like you on every single thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Free will is important. Even if I made the wrong choice, at least it was my choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think, when I think back and listen to your journey, I think for a long time you were kind of robbed of free will.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying? So you were part of a hive mind where it's what I say goes. You know, for the scientists, no, we're gonna do pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the third, and I feel like your story for young ladies out there, especially, is that you should never sacrifice free will.
Never ever, because you end up. I'm not going to speak for everybody, but for me, there's like, I'm learning myself again. I'm learning to love myself again. And I lost so much of that in my 20s and my early 30s that it's like, damn, like, I wonder what kind of person I love the person I am now, but I wonder how much more I could love how I am. And so I live with regrets, but I don't at the same time. You know, like, it's a lot. It was a lot. I'm coming up for fresh air now.
Yeah, you are. And you know, I like I said, we won't go deep into all the minutia and details because it's not for public consumption. But what I will say is, I remember when I, in the recent weeks, I saw you online again, and I'm like, oh my God, I jump for joy, like, yo. And you know what? Not even just that. Like I said, we brought up Alex earlier. Rest in peace, because Alex lost her mother last year. Alexandra, she lost her mother last year.
Yeah, so I spoke to her. My heart breaks for her.
I feel, Alex, if you hear this, we are still thinking about you. Yes. And condolences to you.
And she's going on a year now.
She's going on a year now, pretty much. And me and her reconnected recently, and we were talking. And I had asked, I don't know how you came up. I don't know how. But she also let me know, like, oh, you know, I spoke to Michelle not too long. I said, what?
Yeah, I couldn't connect with her last year. So every once in a while, my family, they'll still stay connected with some people I was close with. Like even mm-hmm. Courtney, we were in Florida for my mom's 60th, and I had invited her out and stuff like that because she's still family, you know, kind
of
thing.
Of course.
And so with Alex, it's the same thing. Like we had the same last name in high school, same last name. We like sisters. So she was my bestie too. My mom was like, well, you know, Alexandria was asking about you, or one of my sisters, somebody was saying that. I was like, yeah, I found her on Pinterest. Under my sister and stuff like that. So I text her on Pinterest, and then we exchange phone numbers, and we've just been, you know, we'll chat every once in a while. So
good. And so when she mentioned that she reconnected with you, I was like, jumped up like Christmas. And again, like I said, I have a very morbid mind. Mm-hmm. My first thought was like, okay, she's alive. And she's well. You know, I'm that morbid. I'm that guy. I'm sorry. But then, you know, when we reconnected and I followed you on socials and vice versa, I saw a pretty emotional video of you, like, packing up.
Oh, yeah.
And moving on with your life. And I could, the same maturity I saw from MySpace 20 years ago, I saw it there, but with, like, dare I say, beautiful battle scars on your face. Beautiful battle scars on your face. Because I could see, you know, obviously, there's physical weight, you know, like I have a table behind me that's heavy. It's a marble table. Sometimes there's weight you can feel, go to the gym, lift mm-hmm. weights. But sometimes it's an emotional weight
mm-hmm.
that you just see on someone like they went through something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They carried a lot throughout the years.
Oh, yeah.
I almost saw you in that video, like, you know, displaying that weight. And as you were driving off, flushing that weight almost.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I myself seeing that video, I'm not ashamed to say I got emotional, like, oh, my God, I wonder what that's about.
Yeah.
But I also said to myself, glass half full, she's moving on.
Oh, yeah. I, 22 years of being with him on and off. Like, we've been divorced longer than we were married. So we divorced in 2010, but we were still holding on to each other. And every time we would separate, try to move on, we'd come back every time. It was always a cycle that we kept getting into. And up to last year, like, we were doing good for a little bit, for maybe 7 years. Remember I told you we started our own business, stuff like that. Like, the kids are homeschooled. They were, you know, we were putting them in competitions, fighting competitions. We were doing good.
Mm-hmm.
One day he goes, I'm tired of this. You know, he started doing this depression thing where I'm feeling, people in church would be like, how are you doing, brother? He'd be like, I'm suicide. I'm like, why are you, like, what's wrong with your life that mm-hmm. is making you so miserable? And so up to 2024, I was like, I don't want to do this. Don't want to mm-hmm. do this. He planned a trip to Maine for the family, and I didn't go. I was like, I'm not going. And he was like, what do you mean you're not going? I'm not going. I'm sorry. I'm not going. And I kept my 7-year-old with me. My baby's staying with me, too. The family was devastated because it was the first trip in years that we took without mommy. They took without mom. And so it was sad, but at the same time, it was a time where I was finding peace. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is so peaceful to not have to conform, to be a yes woman and do what I want. And I finally was able to say no to him. And that same year, I ended up getting my own job because, you know, it got to the point where he was like, my contribution to the business isn't enough. And it was enough. It was more than enough. But I got my job, which I'm still with my job. And I love my job. You know, I made good money there. Mm-hmm. And we ended up getting back together that same year when they came back. ain't trying to make me quit. And I was like, I'm not quitting. I'm not.
Right.
Like, no. And then this past year, we were still in our relationship. And then one day he told me, we have two houses. He's like, go to the other house. I'm like, what? He's like, I need you to go to the other house. I was like, no. Like, what the hell? Anyway, he sent me, I go to the other house anyways. So I'm there and I'm like, okay, can I come back home now? No. Okay. Hmm. Ask again. Can I come back home now? No. The kids are going back and forth between us. Anyway, finally he shuts down, cuts all communication off with me. And then I took that as an opportunity to be able to start looking at me and not worrying about him. Mm-hmm. And so in that opportunity, I was like, I'm sitting in this house and the house is not finished. It's like there's open walls, wires everywhere. I hate the house because it carries so much misery in it. It does carry good memories, but there's so much misery in that house.
Mm.
And I was sitting in this house and I'm crying. I remember crying. I'm just like, why am I going through this? Why am I allowing this to happen to me? And when is it going to be enough? And finally, the day before Thanksgiving, that week, I applied to where I'm at right now, and I got approved the same day. And so they were like, you just got to put a deposit down. I called my brother. I said, brother, I need this money. I'll give it to you back when I get paid. He was like, okay, sis. Gave me the money. I moved in. And
wow.
It was hard for me to leave, though. I was sitting in the house for those days, and I could have just moved in. But I was like, I was struggling to leave because I'm like, oh my God, like this is a big step. I haven't had my own place since 2009 and away from him. And I'm like, oh my God, what's it going to be like? What's it going to be like with the kids? And all these like emotions started hitting me all at the same time. And I'm just like, I took a deep breath and I called my sister. She's like, get out. Let's go. You got this. But she gave me my pep talk and I packed up all my stuff, threw it in the car and came here. And then
first of all, shout out to you for doing that. Congratulations. I'm proud of you. I think it took an act of courage and bravery to do that, to rip the band-aid off and go forth. And I think in your post, you had referenced your sister.
Oh, yeah.
As some, yeah, who supported you. So shout out to her as well. We talked earlier, and don't worry, it's almost over. Don't worry. We talked earlier about how the previous generation, our elders, our parents and grandparents, they let things linger and don't address things.
Uh-huh.
Right now, you're live documenting your journey. Is there anything you want to document as far as a message to your kids for them to understand why you've had to move on just for your own sake? Because, sometimes, just so you know, for full disclosure, I have three children. I have three kids. My eldest is not my biological, but I've been raising her since she was 5 years old. That's my daughter.
Right.
I don't really play the whole step daughter thing. That's my daughter. But I recognize this when she was younger, that sometimes kids grieve the failed Full House idea of what they thought was going to be their sitcom home. They thought they were going to have their biological mom, their biological dad be together forever and ever, and it'd be like a sitcom or a TV show where they have a magical Disney, life. And then reality hits, like, no, life is different. Sometimes parents break up. Sometimes people move on. Sometimes things don't work out. And allow me, a daughter or son, to be an individual, even though I am your parent. You see me as a parent, no doubt, but I'm also an individual.
Right.
I also bleed red, just like you. And sometimes kids have a tough time grappling with that, because you're breaking up their fairy tale.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you feel like you want your children to understand about you and your journey that can maybe ease their maybe potential frustration?
Well, my children, they have been wanting us to break up for years. Like, they've
no kidding.
Like, the two of you are toxic. Y'all need to go separate ways. Since my oldest, when he was 13, he would say, Mom, when are you moving out? When are you going to get your own place? And he would say to me, he goes, Mom, you're more than just daddy. At 13, and I would cry, and I'm like, damn, like, you're right. But I still wouldn't move. Like, even with my kids begging me to get out of this relationship with their dad, it's like, because he's like, well, all my kids, Dad's miserable and you're miserable and we're miserable because you two are miserable.
Wow. And
so we need you two to go your separate way. So when I moved out, I posted a picture on my TikTok with my oldest lying down on the floor. When I showed him the house, he ran through the whole house. He lied down on the floor. He rolled onto the floor. He was so happy that he could come to a safe space because he also endured some abuse too, like the emotional and physical. So he to this day, like, his dad won't talk to him. And he did nothing wrong. And his dad would be like, why are you taking care of Alan? Because that's my child. And I'm not going to disown my child. Just because he's 20 years old, he will forever be my child. 30 years old, mommy, I need you. I'm there. 50, cool. I'm there. If I'm, God willing, if I'm still here. But, you know, right. I'm just like, I'm not ever turning my back against any of my children. These are my children. And so seeing the happiness when my son, even my other sons, like my daughter, she's struggling a little bit. But only because she's struggling a little bit because she doesn't like seeing her father the way he is. She's okay with me having my own place, but she's like, I hope you guys never get back together. And
really?
Yeah, all my kids, they're just like, my 7-year-old, he's just like living life. He's just like, la, la, la. I go with the flow. Yeah.
Right, right.
So, but if I have anything to say to my kids, there's one thing I used to tell my daughter, because my daughter, she harbors a lot of like anger, and I don't know why she harbors so much anger, but when she was little, she would scream at the top of her lungs because her brothers are making her mad. And I would tell her, stop letting these boys rob your power. That's my biggest message to my kids, is don't let somebody rob your power, because that's all you have right now. And if you walk away from anything, don't let somebody tell you that, don't let somebody belittle you. Don't let, like, my son's girlfriend, she'll yell at him. I'm like, you need to get out of that relationship because you're better than that. And I'm not raising you to be a man that's going to take that abuse. And I told him, I was like, you need to recognize that you're looking for the toxicity in females because you grew up in the toxic environment. So my message to my kids is, don't let somebody rob you from you and who you want to be.
Right. Beautiful. Well said. Well said. I agree. Well said. I'm pleasantly surprised that your kids, and impressed that your kids had the wherewithal and the maturity to be like, nah, this is,
yeah,
mom, you need to move out, or mom, this is better for you. Like, I'm glad that they had the emotional maturity to see that. That's awesome.
They had to grow up fast too, mentally and emotionally. I mean, emotionally they do break down sometimes, but they saw so much between the two of us that they're just like, they're coming up for fresh air too. They are also coming out of that. And they're also, you know, they still live with him, and they live with both of us back and forth. But when they're with him, it's like heavy. And then when they come here, they're relaxing. They're doing, you know, I'm letting them be. And I tell my daughter, like, you can relax. You don't have to play mommy here. Like, you know, cause she plays mommy at the other house because there's no woman in the house. But I tell her, relax. I got it.
Wow. You know what's crazy? Through joking, through comedy, and through being jovial and making jokes, I had said the episode would be called Where's Waldo? But really, you just nailed it. I'm really going to call it Michelle's Fresh Air, because you do have fresh air now, and your kids have fresh air, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And you deserve that fresh air. You deserve new beginnings. So as I wrap this up, it's 2026. It's January. So it's a new year. What's next for you?
So what's next for me is, I am continuing my career with my job right now, but I do want to venture out into like the business ideas that I do have. Like, I love making cakes, and I feel like a lot of women are doing that now, but it's something that I really, really enjoy doing. Like, I'm making one today for my son's birthday.
Happy birthday.
So I really enjoy doing that. My fitness career too, I enjoy doing that as well. So I enjoy teaching, training. I'm starting one tomorrow, as a matter of fact, with my sisters, and I already have the whole workout plan. I used to put together workout plans for people. I had 30 clients, and I had to stop that because I was conforming to my relationship. So so that's my journey this year. Like, that's, I'm gonna get back to where I'm to that.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because until I saw your email a little while ago, I saw fitness. I'm like, oh, I didn't know you were a fitness nut like that, or a fitness guru like that.
Yeah, I mean, I fell off recently because of everything that's going on, but that's why I'm going back to it. And because I really enjoy it, and I really enjoy seeing the results in other women. And like, most of my clients were women. I have a few men, but mostly women. And the workout plans, I make my workout plans to for, you know, based on dietary needs. So if you're diabetic, this is your meal plan. This is your workout plan. Or if you can't stand up too long, here's your workout plan. You know, so I love doing that. And it's something that I'm going to continue. I just got to get myself back into it.
Hey, I'm rooting for you. Good luck. I respect that. Me personally, as you're saying this, you know, I have to grapple with the idea that I got to get back on my fitness game. But the pandemic was terrible for me, nutrition-wise, fitness-wise. I really slacked off, and I haven't gotten back to the discipline that I should be at. And mind you, I grew up a boxing fan, so I grew up, you know, just doing boxing fitness, you know, hitting the heavy bag and just, you know, everything was tailored to boxing. And I still try to go to the boxing gym every once in a while, but, you know, once you have kids and I'm also in grad school, and it takes a toll of your time and dedication to it, but there is no excuse. There shouldn't be no excuse.
No excuse.
It takes 30 minutes to get up in the morning and stretch and do little things here and there, especially with all the apps and resources you have today.
Oh, yeah.
So I will hold myself accountable, especially hearing you speak about your journey with fitness. So I will put some time to that. And I ask you to hold me accountable.
Okay. You know, I will.
Hold me accountable. When it comes to my dietary, nutrition, and my actual fitness, I ask you to hold me accountable. Man, this was great.
Yeah, you say boxing. My kids, we were boxing for a while. My son, Alex, won the Golden Glove
here
in Detroit. Yeah, last year here in Detroit, he won the Golden Gloves. And my son, Alan, he did a second place. So he almost got it, but he was second place.
Just to even be in it I respect that. That's dope. I remember you told me also your kid used to do Taekwondo.
I'm a blue belt in Taekwondo.
You're a blue belt in Taekwondo. When did you learn out there in Michigan?
Yeah, in Michigan we started. So my ex-husband's a third degree black belt. So at first I was like, I got to do this. But it was actually fun. So it was really fun. No one would want to fight me because I kick too hard.
Yeah.
These grown women talking about, no, I'm good.
So, oh my God. I didn't even know that about you. I didn't. I know you told me your kids were.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were blue belt. So do you enjoy the fitness? Obviously you do, but do you enjoy the fitness / grind of the discipline? Martial arts? Do you like it?
I do like it. The discipline is really awesome. The fitness is also, it's really nice. And then the competitions, we would go to competitions. That was even a different experience to be able to go to these competitions across the country and cross train with other schools and to teach them what we know. It was a really good experience. And if I could go back into going into Taekwondo, I would. So we've even dabbled in jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai, like all of it.
So in other words, people shouldn't just rock on you then. People shouldn't.
Don't mess with me.
You might just, do you find yourself, because now we're going to get in our martial arts bag. Because like I said, I'm a big boxing fan growing up. I watched boxing all my life. I box a little bit in gyms and stuff. Do you find yourself having muscle memory of certain movements? Like, do you find yourself if someone put their arm on you or someone on you, could you?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna react. My son the other day, my oldest, he comes up to me, he kicks me on my side. I said, "Boy, I went kick them right back in the chest." You know how to
do. I didn't know you were a martial artist.
Yes.
Man, I respect that. That's awesome. That's.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. I really enjoy it. It's the only hard part about it is finding women my age in it. There are not a lot of women that fight competing. Like, I don't like doing the forms, like, you know, the martial arts form. I don't like doing that portion. I do like the fighting portion of it. And there are not many women that do it.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest MMA/UFC fan, but I remember back in her heyday when Ronda Rousey was popping, like she was all over the place, like fighting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember learning about her mother, and her mother was like a Taekwondo champion in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
She medaled or something like that. So you know, that was always interesting to me. Like, I like to see women in particular pick up either a martial art, boxing, or at least get fit, because I feel like life for women is just that much graver.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a safety concern and there's a lot of predators out there and weird dudes out there, weird people in general. And I feel like it's almost like women, I would encourage women to be fit and to be ready to defend yourself because this world is unforgiving.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So I respect that. Last thing I'm going to say to you, to end on a funny note or a happy note, whenever, because you mentioned to me you might be in New York this year.
I'm going near March.
Okay. March. By the way, my wife's birthday's in March, and we're going to go to Mexico City for a few days at the end of March.
Birthday's the 24th.
Of March?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you that. My wife's the 20th. She's the 20th of March. Yeah, Pisces. When I do run into you, have you ever seen Hook by Robin Williams, the movie Hook?
It's a Peter Pan movie.
Peter Pan. All right, so if you remember the movie Hook, the Peter Pan movie with Robin Williams, the whole point of Hook is Peter Pan left. He left his home. He left Neverland. He moved to the States, became a businessman.
Yeah.
He forgot his identity. He forgot who he truly was. He lost that spirit. And when he came back to Neverland, the Lost Boys, he didn't remember the Lost Boys. And the Lost Boys at first couldn't recognize him.
Yeah.
But eventually he did the work to gain his memories back and to remember who he was at his essence.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was accepted again as Peter Pan. I bring that up because there's a scene I love in that movie where, like, there's a young black boy, a little lost boy.
Yeah.
He takes Robin Williams' face and he goes, there you are, Peter. When I see you, I might do that to you. I might, because I'll be so much in shock that you're like,
Mike, come on.
I'll be so happy that you're really flesh and blood alive and well and good and here. I might be like, oh, there you are, Michelle. So, you know, I feel like you're a lost boy who's back.
Yeah. Yep.
Back. Peter Pan is back, and I can already tell you can fly again.
Oh yeah.
I can already tell you know you can swing that sword again, and I can tell you're still a fighter.
Oh yeah, I'm a fighter still. So I'm gonna keep pushing forward, and you know I'm not looking back anymore because I'm 40 years old. I'm 40 years old. Enough is enough. So
yeah, enough.
For life. In the good way to happen.
Absolutely. And on that note, we'll end this episode of The Break Room. I want to thank my guest, Michelle, for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
We did shy of 2 hours. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect you even more.
Thank you.
I respect you even more.
Appreciate being on here.
You endured, you survived, and now you're thriving.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time.
Till next time. I'll give you an update.
March. I'll see you in March. We'll talk throughout of it, but in March, hopefully I see you.
Yes.
I'll do the whole Peter thing.
Right.
All right, Mom. We'll talk.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Later.
Bye.
Later. All right.